Hey, welcome back to the podcast. This is show number 93, and this week's guest is Dallas Sells. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the podcast. This is show 93 of the Lensless Podcast. Andrew?
Hi. Is this two in a row or three in a row? I've lost track.
I think it's three.
Wow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. How are you, buddy?
All right. Yeah.
I'm always glad to hear that you're doing well.
I am. Yeah, I've been... Yeah. What have I been up to? I've been... I've converted my Holger. Do you know I've been talking about that?
Yeah, you talked about last week.
Did
taking
I?
Off, taking well, off
I've
the
actually
lens.
Done it. I've actually done it now, so I'm reaching over for it. And I unscrewed the lens, which was easy because I just unscrew it.
Unscrew it.
Yeah. And then you're left with a threaded portion poking out, aren't you, of the sort of shutter assembly.
Yeah.
So I removed that with a combination of a sharp knife and a pair of pliers. And I just rubbed that down because I thought actually I'd quite like to leave the shutter in.
Mm-hmm.
It makes the focal length, so-called focal length, a bit longer. But the shutter was a bit sticky on this one, and I'd forgotten that, so it's still a bit sticky. So when I press the shutter down now, which just sits immediately behind the pinhole,
cool.
Before the shutter opens, but at least it opens, and then
yeah,
because I can leave it on B, of course I've got. It just stays open as long as I want. Now, I calculate with the use of Eric Renner's book. I know you can use the Mr. Pinhole site and stuff, but I have that book, Pinhole Photography, you know, the rediscovering historic technique, that Bible of pinhole photography.
Yeah.
And it gives, on page 162, it gives a really useful chart, which gives all the optimum pinhole diameters for different focal lengths from 10 millimeters up to a meter.
Wow, that's a big.
If you had a so-called focal length of a meter, right? You need a pinhole of 1.17 millimeters. Apparently,
that's almost 3 feet. That'd be a humongous camera.
It is. Yeah, I don't know what the fall off would be at the sides. I think he goes on to talk about light fall off in the next one. So you'd probably.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, for this, the so-called focal length is about 45 to 50 mil. And my pinhole should be about 0.25 of a mil or something. Anyway, gotcha. My 0.3 drill that I had broke, so I've now got a 0.4 hole in there. Because I reckon I'm going to go for some dreamy looks, you know? I'm done with sharpness. Sharpness is overrated.
Mm.
So my new Cosmo, that's what I've called my camera, because it's got a Cosmo sticker. It's got a Cosmo sticker on the front. And right. it's got a handmade 0.4 pinhole in, which is too big for the camera. But I'm going to see what sort of effects I get. If I want to make it smaller, I can, because I've now got a smaller drill. And because this pinhole is just taped in place. But I didn't know whether to take the shutter mechanism off completely and have more of a wide angle pinhole camera.
Mm.
But at least way, I've got a mechanical shutter on it now.
Awesome.
Which is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
And I can, cool. with the strap around my neck, I reckon I can hand hold that really steadily as well. Do some handheld portraits. Dallas, our guest, who we haven't mentioned yet, has done some handheld stuff as well.
Yep. Cool.
Awesome. So, hi, Dallas.
So, hello, Dallas.
Hello. I was just going to let you talk about me for a while. So. Yeah.
No, well, it seems a bit rude when we start
Andrew won't talk about anybody else but himself. So,
you did ask me. This is
he does it so well, though. That's
this is a pinhole podcast. I thought you'd be interested. And I tell you what else arrived today from those lovely people at Amazon via the friendly driver who delivers any day of the week. I've got a pack of 10 sheets of A4. Black foam core, 5 millimeter wide foam core. As my woodworking skills are rubbish, I figure. First of all, I thought I might use this lens that I pulled off the Holger to make some kind of lumen box camera, just for wet paper or something. Corey, does that sound like a good idea? I don't know if that sounds.
Yeah.
I think they just have a single meniscus lens in those lumen box Cameras, don't they? Yeah, I think.
I don't have any experience with them, so I don't.
I don't really. I'm just talking. You know, I'm trying to sound authoritative, but not really knowing what I'm talking about, and which is quite common. And the other thing I might copy the don't listen if Ilford are listening. I might copy their Ilford box camera. You know, the Obscura,
mm-hmm.
and make some. My own version of that, so when I go out, I can do several sheets.
I bet Mike has one he'll sell you.
Yeah, but I bought a pack of foam core for about £5,
mm-hmm.
and with some glue and
just make something.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you what, I upset Mike Walker as well. I've upset Mike Walker this week
because
I took one of his cones. You know, the little pinhole holders that go in his cones in the Titan.
A little round thing.
That unscrews, you see. But I have a spare one. He sent me a while back one of those.
Yeah, he sent me one too.
And it's been sitting in the drawer. So I figure, what's the point of just trying to copy Mike Walker's precision pinholes? So again, I put a 0.4 millimeter hole in there, which actually is not the right size for either of his. And he seemed to think I was committing some kind of crime by doing this. And I said, well, if I want precision, I'll just use your nice laser drill pinhole. Mm-hmm. I'm looking for something, you know, a bit more arty-farty, really.
So unprecision-y?
Unprecision, yeah. So there we go. And then we got into an argument. Not really an argument, because I knew he was kind of right, really, but I couldn't help myself baiting him a bit about the definition of focal length. I said, well, it doesn't really apply to pinhole cameras. And then he started quoting various things at me. And I gave in the end, because, I mean, it's a good enough term, isn't it? And indeed, Eric Renner, in his book, Pinhole Photography, that I was just referring to, on this chart that I was referring to, he does actually refer to focal length in millimetre.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if we don't call it focal length, what do we call it?
Reciprocity.
No, you're talking nonsense, aren't you? No, there was a bit of a debate going on in was it a debate really? No, not really a debate about who posted in the podcast about in the Facebook group about reciprocity just today. Somebody did, and there was a big stream of discussion about how development affects the compensating for reciprocity with development.
Reciprocity and focal lengths are myths.
Read the thread, because I've forgotten it now already, because I can't be bothered.
So, Dallas.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm doing well.
Good. How's Ohio?
How are you?
I'm good. How's Ohio treating you?
Well, Ohio is Ohio.
Yeah.
I think it really is a state of mind, but it is where I live, so.
What are you going to do?
Yeah, what are you going to do?
But you've got some fantastic scenery. Do you spend much time on the, you know, on around the lakes?
The water?
Not lately. I'm a single parent, and I'm always trying to deal with my children, so it's an ongoing task.
Right. Yeah. How old are they? So,
15 and 11.
Hey, I got you.
Got them into pinhole photography?
I've tried. They're very disinterested in photography at all. So
are mine, so don't worry.
But I figure, you know, through osmosis or something, there's a lot of cameras lying around and photographs and such. They may or may not pick it up.
It'll find them when the moment's right.
Probably, or not.
Or not, yeah. It's not a big deal.
Yeah. So at this point, all they like is YouTube, I think, and TikTok. So.
Uh-oh.
No, we don't know what TikTok is. I know what YouTube is. Have you driven all the way around? Because it looks like you can drive on the I-90 or something and then to Buffalo.
Not since I've been back to the States. I lived in Germany for about 8 years and just returned to the States about 2.5 years ago.
Cool. Was that with the forces or so?
No. This was my now ex-wife and their mother. She's German, so we moved over there.
We won't go there then.
That's a good idea.
I bet you missed the beer. I would miss the beer.
The beer is wonderful. Yeah. The beer is wonderful and it's very cheap. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, you could get a beer for like an euro or two.
Yeah, cool.
Yeah. Huh. No, beer was cheap. Beer and wine was cheaper than any other type of drink. Coffee was more expensive. Tea was more expensive. Yeah. Juices were more expensive. So,
particularly in.
I was forced to drink beer a lot.
You are. It is cheap, isn't it? Particularly in the sort of just in the regular stores, not even in the pubs. It's cheap. But actually, if you just call into your convenience store,
grocery store or whatever.
I was picking up local beer in Berlin for way less than a euro, I think, for quite a large bottle. Yeah. You know.
Yep. Yep. It's very, very cheap.
Right. Germany's full of drunk people. You see.
and those sausages and sauerkraut, that's about it, right?
Well, that I don't eat, but yeah, they have a lot of it. So,
pork knuckle scallops, you know,
pork knuckle
with that hard, crispy skin on the outside.
Mm. Making me hungry.
Like a bit of that pork knuckle.
Did you discover pinhole photography there or before you went?
Oh, no, I actually, my photography, certainly pinhole, was on hiatus for about a decade, actually. Yeah, no, it's a longer story, but we moved to Germany in 2010, and I put all my cameras and negatives and photo books in storage and left them here in the States. And I only took a Canon digital camera and a lens baby with me. So I shot a lot with that, but coming back to the States and being reunited with all my negatives and cameras again has been one of the certainly better things about coming back, for sure. So
cool.
That was good. No, I started doing pinhole in probably the late 80s or early 90s.
Oh, awesome. So it's been a while.
Yeah, no, and I actually took a workshop with Eric and Nancy Spencer and Eric Renner.
Cool.
In like 94, I think.
You're making Andrew jealous.
Well, yeah, no. I guess they won't be being held anymore unless Nancy's still around, isn't she? But we lost Eric.
That was very sad. He was really a wonderful person.
We were in rather painful discussions with him about trying to get him on the show, but the technology was really defeating him, wasn't it, Corey?
Mm-hmm. Actually, I had communication with him about the same time, and he said that he was trying to get on the show, but I guess in Silver Springs, where they lived, the technology was not up to date.
Yeah, he said he had to drive like an hour to get Wi-Fi or something. He had to do something crazy.
Yeah. No, they definitely lived in a fairly isolated area.
Yeah.
So for folks who are not familiar with Eric and Nancy, they were sort of co-founders, if that's the right word, of the Pinhole Resource sort of website and organization. And
right.
They did workshops, didn't they? And that Pinhole Resources magazine.
They did the Pinhole Journal.
Pinhole Journal, that's it, yeah.
Yeah, and that was going – I think that was published for 15 or so years. I mean, it was around for quite a while.
There's
a wonderful journal.
There are. Do you have any copies?
I have almost all of them, I think.
Do you? Oh, they're collectible items there.
Cool. Yeah.
So
I think they – yeah. I looked on the website earlier just in advance of speaking to you, and they – if it's up to date, and it might not be up to date now, they were saying they'd found some more back issues, which they were selling. Yeah. I don't know how much they were selling them for, but.
Yeah, I don't know what they have anymore. I know that I've gone to the website to look for some things, and it hasn't been updated for some time.
No, it wasn't. Because they were advertising workshops, I think, for April 2020. Well, obviously, events have overtaken that.
Yeah.
So how did you manage to go onto that? Was that an introduction to pinhole photography for you, effectively? Is that what got your juices flowing?
No, I had – it's a longer story, but I had moved from Indianapolis to Columbus, Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
And a friend of mine that I met introduced me to Diana Cameras and sort of – he was talking about pinhole, and then I started looking it up online, and I just became totally enamored with the imagery that I was seeing. So I actually bought a Leonardo before I went to the workshop and started playing around with it. And I did a number of self-portraits from in a studio. And so when I went to the workshop, I already knew about pinhole photography, and I certainly knew about what the Pinhole Resource Center was doing.
So the Leonardo was Eric's sort of design, right. Was it, camera?
Right, right. That was their basic pinhole camera. They did a 4x5 and the 8x10, which I have two of their 8x10s too.
And they take regular sheet film holders or the Polaroid 545 back as well.
You can do both, yeah. You can do both. So, but they're wonderful cameras. And you were talking about sharp images. Mm. They can produce very, very, I mean, the pinhole is so precisely drilled that they're incredibly sharp, I think.
Yeah, I think if you, pretty much any top line pinhole camera manufacturer these days, you know, from Reality So Subtle to Zero to Todd Schlemmer's,
right,
to, you know, Vermeer's, they're all producing such good quality pinholes that, you know, which is why sometimes it's a bit refreshing to see something that's not sharp.
Yeah. Right.
I think so anyway.
Yeah, I do.
So so you went on the workshop then after you bought your Leonardo camera, and what was the workshop like? What sort of things did you do and learn?
Well, that's, I guess, a more interesting question. It tells probably too much about me. They had brought a number of photographs with them. The Pinhole Resource Center, they had something like 5,000 to 8,000 pinhole photographs. They had a huge collection, which they donated to a museum ultimately in New Mexico. But anyway, so they were showing those. And going back to the issue of sharpness, I remember seeing they had a large photograph of an urban area with buildings everywhere that was tack sharp. It looked like it was made by an 8x10 camera. So that was what I think really amazed me about, you know, sort of sharpness and the, you know, how the precision of the pinhole can be. But the second day, just going beyond that, there was a discussion about what to do, and he was suggested everybody start making pinhole cameras. And my friend and I, who had come with me, really had never been to New Mexico at any great length of time because it was in Santa Fe. And what I didn't want to do was sit in a classroom or inside a building making a camera.
Hmm.
Because, again, I don't tend to make things. I like buying things. So anyway, he and I decided to go out, and Nancy took us around Santa Fe.
Wow.
And so we shot like 2 days in a row.
Cool.
And that was, you know, that's what we did during the time. But it was just a wonderful experience there. They're such good people.
Cool.
So
yeah. I wonder if she's going to carry on, you know, with the sort of workshops and the whole, you know, the whole deal.
No, I don't know. I've not spoken to her in a long time, but she certainly could. Yeah. But they were such a couple. I mean, they were so, you know, simpatico with each other in terms of their presentation and what she did. She was also more into zone plate photography, at least at that time.
Mm. It must feel like you've had your limb cut off, you know? So we'll perhaps leave it a respectful time, and maybe at some point we'll reach out to her and see.
Yeah. One thing I like about your photos, Dallas, is you're like me. I like the shots you have of like the items on the kitchen table, like the salt and pepper shaker, mm-hmm. where you get really, really close to it, you know, like almost touching it. I like that. I like that. Talk to us a little about, you know, like what do you like using as far as film, and what do you like to do as far as, I mean, do you just carry a camera with you everywhere and just whatever you see, or are you a project person? Like Andrew's a project person.
Mm-hmm.
No, well, I end up doing projects, but not intentionally.
Right.
For most of my, I mean, again, I've been doing photography for a long time. And unfortunately, I had a job that I was working between 60 to 80 hours a week on. So I always did photography in sort of the cracks and crevices of my time. And I used to take cameras with me on the road a lot. In fact, I remember, Andrew, your hotel series that you started. I did that as well, taking them and shooting pinhole, especially inside hotel rooms.
Yeah.
But I tend to just photograph anything that I find interesting, and I do take cameras around with me. And what tends to happen over time, things begin to fit together with each other. And then you realize that, you know, there is consistency in your vision. You do have a project, or at least you have a series that makes some type of sense.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, cool. The series comes along unintentionally, doesn't it, very often?
Right. Well, again, with I tend to be not too organized and not too systematic. So everything is pretty much happenstance in terms of what I do. And, it's been okay. But
within the – so you're just looking down in – folks, we're looking at Dallas's work in the Lenders Podcast Facebook groups. If you don't do Facebook, I'm afraid you can't see them. But Dallas, you've got – talking about hotels, there's one called Hotel 4, which was taken with one of your Leonardos. And it's a corner of a sofa or an armchair with a lamp behind it. And the richness of that photograph and the clarity of the buttons, on the stitching of the chair. And it's just very near the top, 13th of August, 2019. Hotel 4. It's a beautiful, beautiful image of a chair in a hotel. And I don't know. I wouldn't. When you look at it, I'd be hard pressed to definitely say it was a pinhole picture.
Yeah.
So, is that's not a darkroom image, is it? Or is
no? Well, I have printed the image, which I'm trying to find. Oh, there it is. No, that's been printed in the darkroom. I had a darkroom until I left for Germany, and then I sold my darkroom equipment, but that's been scanned and it's a digital print now.
Sorry, I just lost you. That's been scanned and what did you say, Dennis?
No, and that's a digital scan
of a print or of a negative. Or did you
of a negative? Yeah. Of a negative.
Well,
yeah.
It says it speaks volumes of your workflow. You've got great detail all the way, from the shadows right through to the little specular highlights on the wood. And so whatever you're doing it really well. And that's really lovely. And, the camera is just part of that. It's more about what you do to make those images, and I can pick out any one. There's also the other one that shouts out at me, Corey, and you'll like it too, is tomatoes.
Yeah.
Casado pinhole camera, so you have to explain what that is. Yeah. But the image itself is superb. So you've got this salt can and a red gold tin tomatoes, and then some spicy red pepper and some other stuff going on there. And that's just brilliant, isn't it? What's a Casado?
The Casado camera was a manufacturer of pinhole cameras in Spain. And it's a beautiful. I said I don't tend to make cameras. I did convert some Holgas into pinholes, but I do buy a lot of pinhole cameras. I have over 30 cameras, and
you've got the record.
Well, unfortunately, I was on a hiatus in buying cameras until I came back to the States, and now I'm buying cameras again. But I definitely need to shop. I don't have. I'm single, so I don't have anybody to tell me that I can't do it. So that's a problem.
Or to say, what have you been ordering now? As another thing.
That's right. So I can always justify why I need one more camera. The cassette was just a beautiful camera.
I have to look that one up as well.
Mm-hmm. I haven't heard of that one.
No, me neither. So you had a recent camera drop through the door, the Aluma. Is that how you pronounce it? Aluma Holding camera?
Yeah.
Because they started appearing, they came into our Facebook group a year or so ago, and often pop up. And I'm aware they're camera manufacturers, but I don't know too much about them. They sometimes comment on things. But they don't.
I know that he posts a lot on the page as well.
Yeah.
This
looks a peculiar thing. So is that got two pinholes? It's got two shutters on it, has it?
Yeah, it does. And I'm not, I mean, I guess I'm used to more pinholes with just the one pinhole. Uh-huh. I'm not used to multiple pinholes in a camera, but it's a beautiful camera that I've been playing with. I mean, it's structurally very beautiful as well.
Made in Italy.
I've been trying to.
They're Italian by the looks of it.
Right. Yeah. So I'm playing with that, and I bought an Agfa Clack camera that I got on Etsy.
I saw that, yeah.
Which is sort of a fun camera. The pinhole doesn't seem to be as sharp and precisely made, so I'm trying to figure out aesthetically how I feel about it with the images.
Well, I think you've got to, you know, if you want to do these super sharp, like salt and pepper pictures, or your hotel room four, or your tomato cans, you know, then you know what camera to use, but maybe there's another avenue to explore with the less sharp, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you can have more, as I would just say, sort of arty-farty pictures, knowing that it's not going to be as sharp as some of your others.
No, I agree. I'm also doing a lot with expired film, too. And that's always an interesting process.
Yeah, definitely.
So, because especially with the Russian film, I don't know exactly how to pronounce it, but this FEMA film, it's very interesting. And sometimes the results are very discouraging too, because it's so expired, so grainy and clumpy.
Don't you use that, Andrew? Who was it? We spoke to somebody who was really into it recently.
I'm not a massive fan of expired black and white film. I've shot a bag load of color stuff because I quite like the odd weird color shifts, but I don't know, there's something about expired black and white film that doesn't really float my boat, to be honest. With all due respect to our current guest.
Well, that's fine. The one thing I like about it is the price usually, so
yeah, sure.
I tend to play with it a lot, but
is that in sheet film, the streamer, or roll film, or 35mm?
That was the what I've been shooting mostly with it is the roll film. Do have some sheet film. And then I just bought some, what is it, the Shanghai film, which is a really low-grade black and white sheet film.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I haven't shot anything with it, so I'm trying to look at different films, which is unusual for me because all my life I've just shot really with Tri-X. Or Plus X, those were my mainstays.
Yeah, a lot of people still, that's all they use, though, right? I mean, I've been on the Ilford kick. I don't know what it is about it. I just like the way they shoot and develop. But I don't know.
Well, again, I've not been that experimental. I've used D70. So everything I've done is always roughly the same.
That's okay. I mean, you know.
Well, you know, at the risk of sounding like a worn record, you know, people know my views on that, that sticking to tried and tested methods, when you get superb results that you're getting, like closed gas station on the Leonardo 8x10 that you shot or you uploaded on June 24th, Dallas, you know, the quality and the nature of the, you know, obviously with 8x10 film, you can pretty much put anything in there and it's going to look great, I would think.
Oh no, it's pretty amazing the quality you get with 8x10 for sure.
But do you have some kind of Epson 800 or 750 scanner that takes 8x10 film? Do you?
Well, I have an Epson 800, and you just put it on the flatbed; it's by itself, it will scan it. The problem, of course, at least with my computer and such, is the file is so large.
Yeah, I was going to say
But that it really is almost trying to kill, it's committing murder on my computer.
Yeah.
I have to really not run anything else besides that. So.
Yeah, I think that stops me from doing too much 8x10 is knowing quite what to do with them. Making contact prints, which I quite like anyway.
Yeah, no, I don't have a dark room. And at this point, I don't know. I mean, this may be heresy to some degree. I don't know if I want to set one up because it just takes me away from my kids or whatever. So
yeah, but maybe, you know, maybe in 5-10 years time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I had one up for a while. And I wasn't able to have it in like a environmentally controlled as far, you know, as inside your house. It was outside. And, man, I ended up having to do more to try and keep it going because I had, like, mold was growing after the hurricane. It was just, like, this constant, like, it was either, like, too cold outside for me to go and do it, or it was too hot for me to go outside and go and do it. I only had, like, a really small window during the year when I could go, you know, and I kind of just got to the point where I was like, you know what, I'm just kind of like, this is just too much. So I'd do the same thing. I just scan and, you know, posted scan print that way.
It's funny, for so much of my life, I was so anti the encroaching technology of, you know, the internet and digital things. And I remember getting into huge arguments with my friends who would buy, you know, scanners and start digitally printing and whatever. And then when I got rid of my darkroom, when we moved to Germany and I couldn't do it, I really don't mind, you know, digitally, editing, photo editing your images anymore. And it's actually a lot, and certainly is a lot cheaper.
Well, it's like, I mean, it's just the darkroom work, isn't it, really? But done in computers,
exactly.
That's fine.
I mean, there's on Instagram, hang on, what's his name? Wyatt. Junior Wyatt?
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's posted some pictures that he's taken with his cell phone. I mean, I told him, I'm like, man, these are great. You know, I mean, it just happens to be wherever you're at and whatever's going on, you know.
Junior's got into pinhole photography of late, I think, as well.
Mm-hmm. He has
some stuff. Wyatt on film. You can follow Junior on Wyatt on film.
And he has kids too, and he's really enthusiastic about it. You know, he's totally.
Well, he uses them all the time, doesn't he? I mean, his kids are probably of an age where they'll do as they're told. You know, once they turn 15, and you want to use them.
Believe
as a
me, my kids do not want to be photographed anymore. So.
Yeah, neither do
mine. At least with a pinhole camera, they might not realize they're being photographed. So you
mine realize it. They're like,
No, I have caught my daughter. She watches her tablet, and she doesn't move that much. So I caught her a few times. So.
And the portrait you did of Eric Renner, I don't know when you made that portrait, Dallas, but he's standing outside what looks like a
camera obscura.
Yeah, it looks like he's made it out of desert clay or something. Or
yeah, actually, he had an artist come in who wanted to build the camera obscura. There was a special in the Pinhole Journal about it. And that was after I was at the workshop. It was a couple years later. And I wanted to see it. So I was going to New Mexico in the Southwest every year at that point. And I called him and I said, can I come by? I want to see it. So we went there and spent the afternoon with my friend and I, with Nancy and Eric.
Cool.
So
is this camera obscura that he's built somewhere out in, well, it's San Lorenzo in New Mexico. Is it within his grounds that he owns, or is it like,
you know? It's on his property.
Okay. And it looks like, you know, that I don't know what you call it, that sort of classic, those churches you find in New Mexico, the sort of things Ansel Adams photographed, you know, with all the soft curves. It looks in that sort of style, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's sort of Adobe-like for
That's
sure.
It.
I think
it
is Adobe,
Yeah. And so was he actually using it to capture images, or just to, as a sort of demonstration to show?
I think it was more of a demonstration, and it was somebody who wanted to build it for the Pinhole Resource Center.
Yeah,
because on his property and where they live, that's where the Resource Center was too. So it was funny when we went out to look at it. He had to open it up and check for snakes first.
Yeah.
Sweet. Because apparently the rattlesnakes want to go into a cool, dark area.
How many years ago when was this portrait made, Dallas?
That was probably 94, probably 96, 97.
Yeah, so a little while ago. Was that, were you shooting that on Eric's Leonardo camera?
Yeah, that was another Leonardo shot.
Is that handheld, or do you remember, or did you?
No, that was a tripod, I think.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, I do a lot of handheld, and it's fun to do, but
it is.
you really go through a lot of film, because the ones that you really like are a lot fewer than the ones that you don't.
Yeah,
I think
it is great fun. I enjoy it. Oh wow! Yeah. I've just seen another one, folks. When you're listening to this, dive into the Facebook group if you dare, and check out Dallas's pictures, because there's another one here, the Leonardo 8x10, and it's just a fantastic beast, isn't it? This is a coffee beans in a, you know, in one of those what's it jars, you know, with a seal on the top, and then some coffee beans and maybe some spices or something, and then a mortar and pestle on the top. You see this one, Corey? It's a bit down from.
I'm trying to find it.
The portrait of Eric Renner, go down a bit more. And then there's this picture of there's a coffee beans in a jug, glass jar.
Yeah, that was our kitchen.
Oh, yeah, I see. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, you're getting some fantastic quality. Some of the best quality pinhole cameras. I mean, it's a testimony to the sharpness of that, or the precision, I guess, of the way Eric made the pinholes, you know, on those cameras, and so precise as well. You know, if you look at his chart in his book, it's not just, oh well, it's going to be 0.2, that's close enough, it's going to be like 0.234 or something. I'm guessing, you know, whatever method he used, I'm guessing he was that precise to get this degree of optimal sharpness for a pinhole camera.
His background was scientific. I mean, he was an engineer or something like that, if I recall. So
well, you can tell that. Now, anyone who produces a book like the Pinhole Photography book, mm-hmm. you know, when I have the third edition, I think the fourth one starts going into some digital areas. I mean, it's not a book I can easily sit and read from front to cover because it is very, very deep. But I dive into it for certain pages and I learn something every time I pick it up.
Yeah, that picture, you know, of coffee is, you can see the pepper in the jar.
It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah, I don't think I've seen a pinhole picture which is resolving detail in quite such a fantastic way.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, it's all down to the camera, nothing to do with the user, of course.
That's for sure. I don't take any responsibility.
Well, you do. You've judged what could be a tricky exposure, I guess. You know.
So then basically that's an Eric Renner shot with his camera, right?
Yep, no doubt about it. You know, Gary Winogrand had a great, he was a street photographer in the 50s, 60s.
Yeah,
and he shot all the time. I think when he died, he had like 5,000 to 6,000 rolls of exposed film.
And more than that, had been developed too, and he just hadn't even gone through it.
But he made the comment, if you remember, Corey, he said something, somebody asked him, why do you shoot so much? He goes, I just want to see what it looks like on film. That's what I do.
Yeah, me too. I'm kind of that way too.
So
I like
it's all the camera.
He, when I first started getting into photography a long time ago, anyways, I always liked his work because of what he was doing with how he framed everything. And I couldn't figure out what he was doing. And then I figured out that he was using a 28 millimeter lens. That's pretty much what all of his photography is doing.
Oh, yeah.
28 millimeter lens. And that was always, that's kind of always been my, favorite focal length is 28, just because it's like wide enough to get stuff in, but it's not so wide that it gets real distortion-y, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I don't like 35 millimeter. 35 and 50 is too tight for me. I've always liked a little bit wider, so that's my...
No, I agree. No, when I first started doing photography, I really love street photography. And I was doing 35 millimeter cameras, and I just couldn't... The grain quality and the sharpness, I could never get like they did.
Yeah.
So then I started shooting medium format and large format.
His book that he did, the one, I think it was called Animals.
Oh, that's terrific. At the zoo?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, those street photographers were just amazing. So.
Yep. See, Andrew, I am a little bit. I know a little bit.
Yeah, you do. Yeah, no, it's a phrase that I think a lot of us adhere to, that one about photograph things to see what they look like photographed. So I remember mm-hmm. doing, when I was doing my little hotel project last year, leading up to what I thought was going to be my last year in work, which is now at the end of this year, not last year. I remember seeing the picture I'm staring at now is called Hotel Iron, and I thought, damn, someone's done this hotel series far better than I've managed to do so far. So, and this is the one that that struck me when I saw it last Christmas time. And so you've taken the
which one?
Well, this is the ubiquitous hotel flat iron, you know, for putting the crease in your trousers. And you've set pinhole camera up next to the rusty bottom of this hotel flat iron. And then I guess that's you in the back doing the, you know, the slightly ghosty person image sitting on the bed.
Yep, that's me.
Maybe lying down and sitting up, I think, maybe. I can't quite tell.
No, I did, you know, pinhole shots of me sleeping. I was doing it, but there was always a pinhole camera. But it also shows, given the nature of the iron, the quality of hotels I used to stay at. So.
Yeah, it looks about the same as a lot of the places I stayed in. Hopefully no more. But, you know, the use of the pinhole, the use of the iron there is a dominant image. I was just concentrating. Mm-hmm. I was just concentrating more on, you know, me kind of being miserable in the hotel room, really, or trying to convey the message of being a bit, you know, I've had enough of this. This has been going on for decades, staying away in hotel rooms. You've taken a slightly different approach, but it's very, very dramatic. And, love it.
No, I always, I mean, again, I always saw the hotel as sort of landscape that I was trying to capture in whatever way possible. But I don't know.
That is a rather rusty iron, isn't it?
It's been used before, I think.
Yeah. Have you put together any of your images into books or zines or anything like that, Dallas?
No. I was heading that direction before my son was born. And then everything has been on hiatus. I mean, I used to exhibit a lot and do I tried to get my work out very systematically before that time. And then for the last 15 years now, it's really been, I work on my blogs and that's really about all I've done.
Yeah.
I have on WordPress and four different photograph blogs, which are not different, except I keep running out of the free space with WordPress.
I was going to say, wow, you're running four separate blogs.
No, they're not running at the same. I just keep, when I run out of one, I start another one.
Yeah, I got you.
So,
how do folks find, because I'm not sure whether I follow you on WordPress, so I'll have to. So how do I find you on WordPress?
Well, the most recent WordPress blog is drcells. Dot photo dot blog, I think.
Dot blog. Well, we'll soon see. Dr. Cells. Dr. Cells. Shadows on the wall.
Shadow. They're all shadows on the wall. There's shadows on the wall. Shadows on the wall 2. T-O-O. Shadows on the wall 3. Shadows on the wall 4. So. But they're digital images, film images. I shoot large format, so that's on it. I shot with Hasselblads and Noblexes, and so.
Everything,
Yeah. Well, the most recent really have a lot of also lens baby images, which I don't use that much anymore, but I did.
Andrew, you have a lens baby, don't you?
I do. I've shot it. I haven't used it much. I use it on my Nikon F, so I don't have a digital camera, but I use it on. I've had some interesting results on film. And,
Again, when I went to Berlin, I left all my cameras in the States, except for the digital Canon that I had. And I took a lens baby because I always liked Dianas, and I knew that I wasn't going to be able to develop film. Mm. So,
I have two of the original Dianas from the 60s and one of the modern Lomography ones, but I do like the old ones.
No, I have a lot of the old. I collect too many things, but I have a lot of the old Dianas and the clones.
Yeah.
I'm not that fond of the new Dianas like you. The Holga is too, the lenses are too good for me as well.
Take a bit of sandpaper or dump some sand on it and scratch it up or something.
No, you could do a lot with it. But the old Diana lenses were so from the 60s are so good.
Yeah, I've only just bought a couple of the old 60s ones, and I put film through one of them just recently,
And I haven't done it. I've got the negatives sitting on the desk. I haven't scanned them or printed anything from them yet, but they look fun. Because they're all 4x4, aren't they? So as opposed to the modern Diana F Plus, you can swap between the two formats. I think the only thing about the modern one is that I do have one with a flash on. I bought it really cheaply a few years ago, and I never used it at all. And during this lockdown period, I shot maybe 7 or 8 rolls of Portra 160 through this Diana F Plus, and I had the flash on all the time, and a lot of it was outside in the sun, outside in the garden, in our sort of conservatory area, and you get that vibrant color image with a flash, and then the lens is pretty crap in my Diana F Plus, but here and there it's sharp. But I've got probably 60 or 70 images of just over 2 weeks of mundane stuff around the house, you know, shot with that Diana, and I really enjoyed that little fun project for about 2 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, that sounds like fun. No, the Diana cameras are just wonderful.
Yeah. Oh, well, we'll have to look a bit more at your blog. Wow, I didn't realize you had 3. I mean, this one goes from July 2020 back to August 2019.
I started the blog in, I think, around 2010. And then when we moved to Berlin, all of those become Lynn's baby shots for a couple years or a couple blogs, I think. Right. And then I come back to the States and start doing film again.
Well, you know, it's dedication to keep a blog going. A lot of people start blogs, don't they? And then they kind of fade out. Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a WordPress blog and I post to it probably in fits and starts, but mostly once a month or so. But you know, there's a lot of people do it much more regularly, and this shows.
No, I try. I started photography very late. I was in my 30s, and I took a class in Indianapolis at their art center, and the person that taught the class said something that I've always adhered to or tried to, and he says, if you really want to do photography or art, you need to do it every day.
Yeah.
And you have to do something every day. You can read a photo book. You could do whatever. And so I always try to do something very photographic every day. Mm. And putting images on my blog is what I've done for a long since I started. So
cool. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I'm a very boring person, as I said. So
we all are. We're pinhole photographers. we have time to be boring people who are making a picture.
That's right.
So a couple of things intrigue me on this first page. Just looking at your sort of resume, really, I guess. Sociology you studied? My daughter did sociology at degree level, but that's another story. Ohio Arts Council. So under this grant, what's this grants and residencies? Does that mean you had a photographic residency? Does that mean you had someone gave you some money to go away and do photography?
Oh, actually, that's how I met the mother of my children. Yeah, they sent me to... The Ohio Arts Council, I received a residency grant to go to Dresden, which is Columbus, Ohio's sister city. So I went to Dresden for a few months that they paid for. And actually, that was the first time in my photographic life that I was able just to devote all my time to photography. So that was an experience that was liberating in a lot of different ways. So that's how I ended up going to Dresden, meeting my then wife at the time, and then moving to Berlin.
So this is where I can see, I'm staring now at some color lens baby images made from, is this, well, I've just gone into the thing, Mark Germany.
Right, that's all Berlin. That's all Berlin. Lens.
Whose pussycat is that?
Come on, cat, I'm sorry. My bad.
Are they done with the digital camera and the lens baby? These ones?
Yes, yes, yeah. That's with the Canon.
Yeah, because it's a lot easier. It's a lot easier to work out if you're nailing it with a lens baby.
Oh yeah, the good news about digital cameras, you can really edit very quickly. You don't have to wait to develop film.
Yeah.
And since I didn't have a great deal of money when I was in Berlin, developing film and using film was not really going to happen. So
for those who don't know, the lens baby is an attachment you can put on, like snaps on like a regular lens, but you can squeeze the end of it to change it, like kind of shifts and things on like a view camera, kind of. You can distortion and perspective control.
Yeah, I have a.
I mean,
there's a lot of versions out now, aren't there?
Right. Yeah, the one I had in Germany was one that was supposed to give you complete control. You could lock it into place, but it was broken. So I did it. I was always doing it very quickly with my hands. So
I have the original one. I think the Mark One. It was just a squidgy bellows, really. You know, like a. You've got complete control of it. So you can see what's happening. And when it's attached to your SLR, you can see what's happening. It's a question of moving that sweet spot around the viewfinder and then keeping your fingers steady while you press the shutter. But it has a series of effectively waterhouse stops, Corey, you know, little apertures that you can drop in there from wide open down to, you know, I don't know what size they are. For.
Yeah.
But I don't use it. I don't use it a lot.
Is that the one that? Oh gosh, what's her name sent you?
No, well, she did. Yeah, Diane. Yes.
Diane. Yeah.
Yeah, Diane did send me. She sent me the Muse, the Lens Baby Muse. So I have that too. Mm-hmm. I did actually shortly after buy the original version. So I've got two really, but the. This has got apertures in from 5.6, f4, 16, 11, 8. Yeah. So if you want a real dreamy effect, you either put no aperture in at all or you stick your f4 in.
Yeah.
And then I guess if you put the f16 or even f22 in.
It tightens it up a bit.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah. It must be hard to see as well when you're trying to make the shot.
Well, if you're using film, you would. If you're using a digital camera, you can just put it on live view and it'll do it.
Yeah.
So it's interesting, and I think if I go anywhere and just take my SLR with me and nothing else, I'd have this in the bag just to add a little bit of
mess around
extra creativity, you know.
Yeah.
So Lens Babies, but yeah, you've got some nice examples. People can see those on Dallas's website. Look,
nice lens, baby.
No, they were fun to do. Although, again, after about 8 years of using it, I've sort of moved on.
Burn out with it, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can overdo it, I guess, but it's, I don't know, you know, it's kind of interesting. You can move that plane of focus around, can't you? And it gives you some different looks.
Better to burn out than fade away, I guess, right?
when I first got it, my interest that it, you know, it sort of created a Diana like image where you could have one part of the image sharp and you know you could have fall off elsewhere, so I don't know how true that is, but that was at least my thinking.
And you have another folder again just on the main page called Pinhole Plastic Lens Baby, so I guess that's a collection of images, just either pinhole or Diana-y type things or lens babies, and there's a whole raft of
That's
great shots in there too.
Thank you.
Yeah. Wow. Folks, you should go and check out Dallas's site. I love the Dumbo one. Yeah. Goodness me. And you've been to New York and photographed the Flatiron Building, which is one of my favorite spots.
Who else? Somebody else recently went and did that too.
Steichen, really, his image of the Flatiron Building always inspired. So,
no, but I like yours with the movement of the cars and the people.
Thank you. That's a fun area to photograph. Mm-hmm. I used to go to New York a lot, actually, because the headquarters of I worked for a union, but that was in New York. So I always took cameras with me when I went to New York.
You've got Adorama just down from there, haven't you, as well?
Oh, yeah. Yep. And B&H.
I don't think I ever went to B&H. I went into Adorama and bought two carrier bag fulls of FP100C for $4, $3 a pack.
Mm-hmm.
And probably a dozen packs of FP3000 B for I think they're about $6 or $7 a pack.
Yep, I bought some of that and started playing with it probably literally 3 weeks before they discontinued it. And that's what I paid. I paid like $6 or $7 for it, and then like they discontinued it, and I went online to try and buy some more, and it had already gone to like $20 a pack or something. You know what I mean? Like I was like, oh my god.
Yeah, I think now this would have been in, when did I go to New York? 2012. Yeah, I think 2012, because we stayed just a couple of blocks to the south of Flatiron Building. It was a small hotel called the Broadway Plaza, and it was above a great pizza store.
Cool.
And it was cheap and really nice, actually. You know, the pizza was cheap. The hotel wasn't that expensive because we had there was me and my wife and the two kids. So
I love a good cheap pizza.
We had. Yeah, and there's this picture here you've shared recently into the group as well. Your abandoned building, again another Leonardo 8x10. It's got the shadow of your camera in the bottom of the picture, which is nice.
Right. Yeah.
And it's a pretty wide angle, isn't it? Really, because you've got quite a lot of wide angle distortions going on, and it's great. I love it.
Yeah.
And there doesn't seem to be massive amount of fall off on the edges on this Leonardo, because that can be a problem, can't it? Is it a flat?
No, it can be.
Is it a flat plane?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yeah. Excellent.
No, I liked, I like old industrial abandoned sites. So
yeah, I do too.
I tend to gravitate to those areas of cities.
Yeah. And you've got a few, what you refer to as auto portraits on there. I think some of them might have been a few years ago.
Right. Yeah, those were, some of them were when I was, before the workshop with, that I took with Eric, then I, continue to do it. The one thing when I was bored, I was always around as a subject. So
yeah, have you still got that handsome beard?
I do. Well, I have a goatee now, which is a lot grayer.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do an auto portrait now unless I use a very imprecise, very poorly drilled pinhole.
Nice and fuzzy.
Yeah, nice and fuzzy.
Nice and fuzzy.
And you've got a dead bird as well. Every pinhole photographer should have at least one dead bird picture in there.
Yeah, that was during my quarantine walk with my daughter and my dog. And apparently the bird didn't quarantine well. Uh-huh. So,
yep.
Oh, yes. I've just seen it. So there's a picture you've taken with your Diana camera in Columbus. And it's a doodah parade.
Yes.
Doodah, I imagine. Anyway, some guy in an Uncle Sam hat with glasses riding some kind of, I don't know what it is.
Bicycle-like
thing, but he's actually surrounded by the wheel, isn't he? Does he stay upright or does he go upside down?
No, he was upright. It's motorized. The doodah parade was, I don't know if they're still having it, but I'm sure not this year.
Yeah.
But an irreverent political parade.
Is that what it is?
Which was always fun to go to. It was always a political satire sort of parade. So whatever the current events were, somebody was there satirizing. So
brilliant.
But
Well, it's a real testimony to the notion of photographing things to see what they look like photographed, and you do it really, really well. And if you start to group images together and form little series out of that, well, that's great. If not, you're making some wonderful, wonderful little observation pinholes to a really high standard, which is fantastic. So
yeah, I don't even like doing the project thing. I kind of like just doing the, see what it looks like.
Yeah, but I bet if you go through your images, your backlog of images, Corey, you'll probably find there are subjects that you're drawn to you can just group together. So you probably are, without realizing it, shooting,
unintentionally.
Yeah, because there's things that we all like, we all get drawn towards, don't we? Subjects that we all get drawn towards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
All right, well,
yep.
Dallas, we appreciate you coming and hanging out with us.
Well, it was great talking to you both.
You want to just remind people, Dallas, where they can see your work particularly the blog.
Well, the only, yeah, the only blog that I recall the name for, because again, I go through so many, is drcells.photo.com, which is a WordPress blog.
Yeah. I'll post a link into the, into the Facebook group.
Yeah. All righty. Well,
are you still on Instagram, Corey? Can folks still find you though? Have you given up? You were, I thought you were talking about giving it up. You were.
I was, but I'm still there. I'm just, I've just kind of pulled back everything really, except for I went through and kind of did some filtering of some stuff, and I'm really just looking at the pinhole stuff. That's kind of like my, the Facebook group and Instagram is kind of my only contact with the pinhole world. You know what I mean? So I kind of kept up with that, but. Yeah, you can find me on Instagram at Pinhole Cannon. Yep. And the Facebook group.
I've just, excellent, well done. I've just put on a link to your blog, Corey, into the group.
My blog? I don't have a blog.
No, not your blog, into the Facebook group. Dallas's blog.
Dallas's blog.
Yeah.
Excellent. The man, Dallas. Let me check this and see. Yep, there it is. Cool. All righty.
Dallas, yeah, thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
It's been great.
Yep.
I love chatting with people when we, this is the beauty of the sort of synergy of the Facebook group and the podcast. You know, they work so well together. And having folks on who just regularly post into the Facebook group and who want to come on and tell us a little bit more about their work and their love of pinhole photography. I think that's what makes it, you know, that's what keeps us going, really. Yeah. Dallas, so well done. Thanks for coming on.
Famous or not.
Well, thank you very much.
We just like talking to people, whether you guys are world-renowned or not world-renowned. It doesn't bother. It doesn't matter. It's, we just see somebody doing something that we like and we say, hey, we want to talk to you. So,
yeah, and we think of all the careers we launch as well.
Yeah.
Well, I can't wait then. should I keep my phone on so I can get all the calls?
Yeah.
Okay, right. Good.
Yep. Cool. Excellent. Okay, so have a great week, everybody, and we'll talk to everyone soon. Thanks a lot, Dallas.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. Thank you. Thanks, Dallas.
Okay. Bye. Have a good weekend. Bye.
I realized I had to do a podcast.
Hello.
Hello, Dallas.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
Suddenly some echo appeared on the lines.
People have said that about me my entire life.
Now I can hear myself just afterwards. Corey, do you want to hang up? I can't talk about this. I can just hear myself. Do you want to talk and... Sorry, not talk. Hang up and put us back in.
Should we both hang up?
I don't know. I'm going to hang up anyway. See what Corey does.